What you're going to hear will give you food for thought. It will probably also spoil your appetite. Crossing oceans broadens your horizons, so they say. They're right. Last summer, before I sailed back from the Azores in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean to Heybridge Basin on the River Blackwater, I'd never really given much thought to cannibalism or murder as a lifestyle choice. But that was before I'd sailed with Graham Parker. And please note, I've used his real name to protect the rest of the world. On my return, I couldn't wait to upgrade my RYA day skipper qualification with the optional cannibalism, stroke murder, stroke filleting and flavouring extreme survival module. Graham had done the ARC, that's the Atlantic Rally for Crusties, followed by a Caribbean season, and he was now headed back home. In his wake, he'd left a trail of broken, enfeebled and withered crew who would weep with pathetic gratitude if you offered them so much as half a cashew nut covered in fluff. Then they'd lick the tears off each other's cheeks for extra sustenance. Yet I suppose at least these surviving hollow-cheeked wretches could rely on one another for support. And indeed they had to, because they couldn't stand up by themselves. They were just too weak. And that's what appealed to me about sailing with Graham. Other people cross oceans for adventure, to sample new lands and cultures, for a spot of mild discovery. Me, I reckon sailing with Graham would help me lose a few pounds. My arrival at Horta was promising. As I walked along the harbour wall, I found Graham kneeling down, not praying, but repairing an ancient pound shop flip-flop with a sliver of cardboard. Such commendable thrift seems usual among blokes who own great big shiny white sailing appliances. Graham's was very big and shiny, a Jeannot Sun Odyssey 37 called Musar, the kind of boat anyone could afford, he told us, if they spent less on flip-flops. That was the first lesson, and clearly this was going to be a very instructional and character-building experience. My crewmate, David Harris, is a Morris dancer and a high-voltage power engineer, and these are both disciplines that entail having a beard. Little did we know then how vital his beard would be to his very survival. David is also lean and wiry and loves his food, and it's thanks to him that we had anything edible on board at all. Whenever we asked about buying food or victualling, to use the correct nautical term, Graham, who is about the size of one of those pixies on the Rice Krispies packet, just waved his hand dismissively and said, "Oh, there's plenty." Well, there wasn't. So David dragged us off to the supermarket, where each time he picked up an item, Graham grumped, "What do you want that for?" We were puzzled at the time, but later, in mid-ocean, we got to comprehend the weird, twisted logic of the skipper who's mated more to his boat than the world. Food, Graham explained, only slows a boat down. And to Graham, boat speed was everything, even when we were going in the wrong direction, which we frequently were. Once underway, we soon settled into a routine. Around about tea time each day, Graham would go below and bring up a large biscuit tin and let us look at the pictures on the lid. Oh, we had such fun. One evening, when it was Graham's turn to cook, I asked him what he was cooking and he replied, "Oh, it's not cooking, it's using up." Basically, his approach was to delve into the deepest, darkest recesses of the bilges and create a medley of the three rustiest, oldest, most date-expired and swollen cans he could find. These he warmed in a rusty saucepan, so at least our diet didn't lack for iron. In any case, we soon stopped Graham cooking. David created some fabulous meals out of simple basics. Sandwiches from old almanac pages spread thinly with savoury sycophlex was a favourite all round. In the long night watches, he strained microorganisms and small marsupials out of his beard for extra life-giving sustenance. Graham, meanwhile, had evolved into the ultimate long-distance cruising organism, literally able to nourish himself. Every now and then he peeled a dry flake of skin off his nose, and that little nibble would sustain him for hours. That was also the reason me and David steered clear of the cornflakes. Mind you, There was a serial mystery that remains unsolved to this day. You may or you may not know that 36 packs of Weetabix come in 3 tubes of 12 rusks. Now imagine Graham's consternation when he found just one at the bottom of a tube. That meant someone had eaten 3. I swore it wasn't me. David swore it wasn't him. And it kept us going on the long night watches, the thought that forevermore, wherever she sails, Musar's Weetabix packs would be out of whack, uneven, stilted, crocked. Thoughts like that are good enough to eat. And David and me will dine out on that for years to come.